Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Jay Posner, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Padres, Rockies, three games, three huge games at Coors Field. Oh, boy. Jay, here we go. Here we go. It is funny, the roller coaster of emotions the last week as you are watching the Padres. That's at least what I gather from the emails that I get. Like Thursday, last Thursday, no chance. By Wednesday, this team is absolutely, they're on fire. Whoa, look at this pitching staff. Oh my gosh, they could really make a run in the playoffs. Lose yesterday, you're coming to Coors Field. Oh no, it's not over till it's over. Oh, Jay, I know you've been going through this.
Oh, my stomach is in knots, Kevin, as you know, but for other reasons. Anyway,
I'm just looking at
my trusty standings to see where things stand at the moment. And the by the way, the Rockies are terrible. Did we establish that?
Pretty crazy how bad they are.
I know, but they're at Coors Field, and the Padres have just been atrocious there for so long.
I think they actually are 40-38 at Coors Field.
Yeah, the Rockies are.
Yes, I believe 24 under everywhere else, but
I was going to say that's really bad if they, yeah. But the Rockies have not been good. They've been outscored by 146 runs this year. The Padres are in the fifth spot right now. We still have yet to discuss whether we think the fifth spot or the sixth spot is best. I think we're kind of both waiting to make sure that they get one of the spots before we
spot is better, but
before we worry about that, you're trying to avoid the Dodgers for as long as possible.
Absolutely. I believe anything can happen. First off, you keep going, you keep, you know, keep rolling, and then you make the Dodgers, maybe they're in some sort of series where they got to use pitching. Without a doubt, the number six spot is best, and you got to go to St. Louis, which is obviously a better team than just came here to Petco, but much better route.
Yeah, I would not argue with that. It's funny, I've seen discussion from in the American League over the same thing, because the Guardians are the third team, and everybody thinks that they're the quote easy team, and then you avoid the Astros. People trying to avoid the Astros.
Without a doubt,
So I think it's the same thing. It's definitely a potential flaw in the playoff system, which is no surprise. Given how they slept,
but then again, it could all work out like where the Dodgers get beat in the first round, and you know, I mean, last year was anyone predicting the Braves? I know they'd gotten hot and they have good players, but I don't recall that the 106 win Dodgers were not predicted to.
Right, and the Dodgers are already at 104 wins with this weekend, and then they come to Petco next week. But anyway, the Padres are in the fifth spot, although yesterday reduced their lead over the Phillies to a half a game, and the two teams are tied in the all important loss column.
So with the Phillies having the tiebreaker,
and the Phillies have the tiebreaker, correct? The Padres have the tiebreaker over the Brewers. So the three game lead that the Padres have right now over the Brewers is really more like 3.5, as we've talked about before. The Brewers are playing the Reds this weekend, and then I think the Brewers go home for their final nine.
Just as the
Padres do. I believe the Phillies are on the road for most of next week. We've long ago gave up trying to predict any of this stuff. You're right. The Padres a week ago Thursday looked like they were barely belonged in the major leagues. They had the greatest meeting in the history of meetings, and they won five games in a row, had a 2-0 lead yesterday, had a 3-1 lead yesterday, and Joe Musgrove left the game early. He says, they say, nothing to worry about. Obviously, we'll see what happens. Anytime a pitcher has a bit of a dead arm at this time of year, to me, it's something to worry about. It is good that he does get a day off, an extra day before he faces the Dodgers.
It is good that he went five innings and, you know, pitched pretty well, too.
Pitched pretty well, true. and then we'll, you know, I don't know. We'll see what... We'll see what happens at that point. And, yesterday the bullpen let them down. It has not done that very often. Adrian Morejone had a good inning, and then he had a bit of a control issue, and Martinez came in, and the same thing happened. And look, the Cardinals were terrible for pretty much all but one inning of this series. I mean, offensively, they had one inning in the entire series, and it was enough to win a game. So, that's what happens sometimes. I've heard that's baseball.
If they'd had two innings, it might have been enough to win two games since the Padres won 1-0 in the middle game.
And that's the thing. The Padre offense is still so shaky. It's not like you can say, oh, that everything is fixed with this offense. I mean, they had the one game on, you know, the 1-0 win, as you pointed out. Yesterday, I never looked at the final running scoring position number. I know, like you did, it was 1-for-8 at one point.
They didn't get anybody else, I don't believe. It was 1-for-8.
Yeah.
And all game, it was like, okay, I mean, the Cardinals are going to score at some point. You might want to keep adding on more than one run at a time.
And Musgrove pitched out of a couple jams as well. The Cardinals could say the same thing. But you know, they got the grand slam. You win 2 out of 3 against a team that's winning its division and going to the playoffs. It's hard to, you know, nitpick everything and say it's a bad week. But you don't want to give away wins. And it's funny, I have this list that is here where I have kept all the blown games by the bullpen. And I realized, you know, yesterday I was at the ballpark with you and I didn't have the list with me. And I thought that they had not blown a game since late July. And you pointed out in your story today that was true. It was the game in Detroit on July 27, which I believe was Taylor Rogers on that day, where he gave up 2 in the bottom of the ninth, and they lost that game to the Tigers. And they had gone 2 months, as you said, the bullpen had made games that were close, not close, and there were tie games that were lost and that sort of thing. But that was the first time they had led a game in the final 3 innings in 2 months and had not won. And it had happened, you know, 9 times between April and in the first 4 months of the season. So that's a pretty good record.
And look, and you know, quantifying what a reliever does, you can't do it by ERA or really almost anything. You can combine some things, inherited runners scored, maybe FIP to see strikeouts, right? But scoreless innings, and the scoreless innings have piled up for Nick Martinez, Tim Hill, Robert Suarez. Heck, Pierce Johnson has not allowed a base runner in 4 outings. Now, here's the deal. I think it's actually 3 outings. They've all been losses. They have not found a way to get Pierce Johnson into high leverage situations. Uh-huh. But they have, my point is, some really good relievers that are pitching really well right now. You would have thought, oh, hey, what a great idea. You got this pitcher who's a little bit tired, 5 innings, got a lead, boom.
Yep.
Things are looking good. It didn't work out. Okay, here's the problem. Yesterday, the Padres dropped to 42-43 in their last 85 games. That started June 17th here in Denver.
Right.
They just swept the Cubs. I know I talk about it a lot. To me, it is a turning point of the season, right? Mm-hmm. They were 17 games up. They were in first place in the NL West. And it was like, whoa. They had just scored, I think, 1.2 million runs in 4 games in Chicago. It was like, oh, right. Yeah,
that was the 12-5, 19-5
by the games. Time they got to – I'm all screwed up with these Monday off games. But by the time they got to Wednesday and they won 1-0 against the Cardinals, they were 42-42 since that day, June 17th. It was like, whoo, they finally got back to 17 games above 500. Oh, if they sweep the Cardinals, not only will it have been funny that 2 years in a row both teams swept at home against each other, but this team could be, with a win on Thursday, would have been 18 games above 500 for the first time since they finished the 2010 season 90-72. That's amazing how bad the Padres have been. Anyway,
right.
It's a loss to a first-place team, but it's like – now you got to go to Colorado. You know, yes, the Brewers are in a worse place because, like, with every passing game that they don't win or that the Padres do win, it's like even if the Brewers win but the Padres win, the Brewers have to really feel like they're running out of time.
Right, right. No, there's definitely more pressure on the Brewers at this point. It's funny. I looked back on that day. You talk about the Thursday game in Chicago. They won 6-4 to get to 41-24. 17 games over. Joe Musgrove was the winner that day. He went to 8-0. He had a 1.59 ERA.
He had COVID.
At that point, right. Taylor Rogers saved his 20th game that day. And the Nomar Mazara hit his first home run that day. And they won. And the headline on the MLB app story for that day says, a first for San Diego since 2010. First place alone in mid-June.
That's right. Yep.
And so, but as you said, then they they went to Coors and, you know, lost the first game at Coors 10-4. The second game, they lost 5-4 after blowing a 4-2 lead, and then lost on the Sunday game as well, I believe 4-2. Or no, that, I'm looking at a different series.
Different time where they got swept in Coors.
8-3. They got 8-3 at Coors, and then yeah, they went home and won three straight against Arizona, and then things really, you know, sort of went down.
Oh, thank goodness for the Diamondbacks.
But you're right. I mean, that weekend at Coors, which was just over 3 months ago now. They went back to Coors right before the All-Star break, managed to win one out of four.
Broke a streak. Yep.
Yeah. So they're one and six at Coors this year. The newsletter today talked all about Coors, all about their record there, all about the players. This is different. You know, there's nothing we can do except say, yeah, it should be different. You know, the Padres are a better team than the Rockies, but they have to prove it at Coors. And it used to be a place where, I mean, the Padres weren't always terrible there. I mean, they've had games. I mean, Will Myers, Matt Kemp hit for the cycle there. You know,
Will Myers said when I talked to him yesterday, and I started it by kind of reminiscing about, gosh, I remember you guys would go there in 18, 19, and it was like you really looked forward to it because you guys sucked, and, you know, it was you were going to hit some home runs. He's all, yeah, it's really weird. Even when we were bad, we were better at Coors than we are now. So, yeah. Obviously, now here's two things that stand out. Take the past decade of the past 10 full seasons, so not counting 2020, when they were actually very good at Coors Field. And I'll always remember being in Denver for the big Mike Clevenger trade and the Austin Adams, Austin Nola trades. That's what will stand out to me. But anyway, so I think also that Austin Nola showed up here and he caught like 9 different pitchers throwing a shutout at Coors Field in like his first game. But anyway, if you take the last 10 full seasons, the Padres 7.74 ERA at Coors Field this year is their second worst. They only have 9 home runs in 7 games here. Those two things stand out to me. Where, like, they've actually hit pretty well. Their on-base percentage, their OPS is actually decent here this year. But their ERA stinks. Their pitchers have not done well here. And they're not hitting home runs. So I was a young man when Will Myers, who at one point was like the third best player at Coors Field in the history of the ballpark, the last time he hit a home run here, they're just not doing what you would normally do here. And their pitchers, terrible place to pitch. Even the Rockies pitchers are struggling here this year, but they're just not playing well here.
Well, they've given up 51 runs in 7 games. So, you know, there's no way really to spin that. I mean, those are bad numbers. And if you're not hitting home runs on top of that, I think they've scored, I tried like 30 or 31 runs. I was just trying to do the math real quick there. So that's not enough. They're scoring like 4 runs a game and they're giving up 7. You can tell where that's headed and why they're 1-6. The interesting thing tonight is that the Padres, you know, skipped over Sean Manaea and decided, you know, they didn't want him to pitch in against the Cardinals, I guess. So
they're lefties. They could kill lefties, they do.
Right. So instead, he gets to pitch at Coors Field. He did pitch okay there, I believe, early in one of the trips up there this year. He had an okay start. And I think Jeff Sanders mentioned that in his on deck today. Allowed 2 runs in 6 1/3 in his only start this year at Coors Field. The Padres would sign up for that, you know, every day of the week for any starting pitcher going to Coors. They're facing Ryan Feltner, who has been terrible this year against basically almost every team except the Padres.
But what was it at San Diego? Because I was looking over the 3 starters. You got Chad Kuhl tomorrow and Kyle Freeland. And I'm used to saying how well the Rockies pitchers pitch against the Padres, but this year, it's not like it's been great. It really has been the Padres pitcher's been the problem. But how's Feltner done at Coors Field against the Padres?
That I did not notice that. Chad Kuhl's been lit up in his last 3 against the Padres. I think, in fact, I was editing Jeff's on deck today, and it said something like he had allowed 17 runs in 14 innings or something, and I thought, That's got to be a typo or something. So I went back and looked, and it wasn't.
Yep.
that's what he's you know, that's what he's done. That's what he's done so far. So he has not been. I'm trying to find it here. Feltner has a career ERA of 7.2 at Coors Field. Jeff does not mention in here where the games were this year. So we will.
Recall looking up. Freeland, who I'm used to absolutely dominating the Padres. I feel like the Padres helped him get his nice contract with the Rockies because the guy knows how to pitch at Coors, but they've actually done pretty well. I think they scored 7 runs in 4 innings last time. And
He has a 5 ERA against them this year, but he's 3-0. So that, you know, that also tells you something. Chad Kuhl is 14 in 3 starts.
Here's what you need to do at Coors. And this is straight from, you know, people like that are there, the pitching coaches, the manager, the players at Coors Field. You need to pitch better than the other pitcher. That's it. That's your successful day. If you go 5 innings and give up 5 runs and your team is up 7-5 when you leave, you had a good outing that day because you were at Coors Field.
Is that sort of like you being a group of people being chased by a bear, and you don't have to be the fastest person, you just can't be the slowest?
You've got to be better than the other guy, and that's something that when the Padres, and I'm sure other teams do too, though I don't know that anyone struggles like the Padres. The Dodgers certainly don't. The Giants certainly don't. Who cares what the Diamondbacks do? But the Padres talk about the Rockies being comfortable at Coors Field, and it's obviously something that their pitchers are aware of, right? I have to grind through this game, you know? There must be nobody happier to get on the team charter when they're going on the road than pitchers. You think of hitters and, like, they know this gigantic ballpark and this where the alleys are. And, you know, they have the right kind of hitters for Coors Field, supposedly, whatever. Padres do, too. It's garbage. But the pitchers – it's like, hey, Sean Manaea, go ahead and give up 7 today if your team's up, you know, 14-7.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I don't know that anybody will say good job, Sean, if he gives up 7. But
no, I'm not sure that we would that you'd be hearing that.
Jay, I want to talk about something that you brought up, the Padres offense and how it's still shaky. So last night, in the course of doing research, if you saw today's newsletter where I talked about Manny Machado, one of 4 players to have at least 30 home runs, 6 seasons since 2015. And that's the most. Now, Nolan Arenado's next homer, he will have 7 30 home run seasons since 2015. Right. But in doing that, I, and then after watching Goldschmidt and Arenado this weekend and seeing that, you know, Goldschmidt in particular has cooled off, I decided that I would kind of revisit some MVP numbers. Paul Goldschmidt is still your MVP front runner. All right. Mm-hmm. Manny Machado is not out of the running. This thing is not over. I am telling you. And one of my reasons, besides that the numbers are there, that Manny is second, third, fourth in like everything, WRC plus, OPS plus, OPS, production numbers, runners in scoring position, go-ahead RBIs. There's a lot of things. Paul Goldschmidt is on the team with the best OPS plus in the National League. He has Nolan Arenado hitting behind him.
Right.
Freddie Freeman, who is a definite MVP candidate based on the numbers and what I see with my eyes, has Trey Turner. Justin Turner's out of his mind since Joe Musgrove pissed him off, evidently. take it totally out of context, but whatever. And the Dodgers have the second highest OPS plus in the National League. There are like 6 guys on the Mets in the top 20 in OPS plus, WRC plus. How many people besides Manny Machado? And yes, Juan Soto is definitely in the top 5, top 10 in virtually every category. But a career worst slump that lasted 1/3 of his time with the Padres. So
right, right.
Who has Manny Machado had to help him out? I'm just telling you, Manny Machado, from this homer right here, is still an MVP candidate. It's unbelievable.
I agree with everything you said. The only reason that I don't think he's going to win is because it's not talked about.
I don't think he's going to win either, but yes.
Right, and people are not looking at it in that sense that you just said. And you're right. I mean, look at – you know what would be interesting, and I know you can do this. Look at all the guys that have hit behind Machado this year. I mean, you had guys
– right here. I don't have it figured out yet, but it's absolutely right there.
It's Nomar Mazara, Jorge Alfaro, Cronenworth, Myers, Hosmer for a long time. I'm sure Camposano might have hit behind him one day. Austin Nola probably hit cleanup at some point. I mean, Hassan Kami might be him, and Profar might have hit cleanup at some point. And you know, that I don't understand, and I've my wife's gotten tired of hearing me sometimes during games say, I don't know why anybody would throw a pitch to Manny here. And yet, you know, he's got enough pitches, and he's not, you know, he's not chasing at least very much. He goes through, he has these weird games sometimes where he looks just complete. Wednesday night was one of them when I was there. He just looks completely, you know, like it's just not his night. But, you know, it happens. He's playing 155 games a year or whatever, and you have your bad nights and you're not seeing the ball well or whatever. But there, without a doubt, Machado has been more, you'd have to say he's been more valuable if you're just going to go on value.
If that were
more valuable.
Because right, it specifically says that's not it doesn't have to be one of the criteria.
Exactly. And look, I'm not saying that it should be, but you have to factor that in when you're looking at it. It's like, who else has this guy had around him this year? And compared to, as you said, you know, Freeman and Mookie Betts, by the way, is having an incredible year as
absolutely.
Well. You know, those guys hit in the top three, the best top three in baseball in the order. You have the two guys in St. Louis that we just saw. You know, the Braves and Mets both have all kinds of great offensive players. And the Padres have Machado.
I will also say this, Austin Riley, and there are some really good players on the Braves, but not that are performing in any of the metrics or numbers. So Austin Riley is another guy. But and by the way, I did not say that I've made up my mind or anything like that, but here's what I love. We are in a day and age where not only can we say anything, but we can get it seen by other people via social media. Okay. And when I then go, because I would have said that, I would have said, you know what, Manny Machado, without looking up a single number, I would have been able to at least make the statement, man, Manny Machado doesn't have the support some of these other guys have. But I get excited when I go and I dig down into the numbers and I go, whoa, it's worse than I thought. and that excites me. By the way, the number of times that I don't respond to your email when you send me something as a fact, like such and such has never gotten a hit here, or this guy does this, or, you know, that guy can't hit a curveball. And I go, well, that's weird. Let me look it up. Holy crap, he hits 474 against curveballs. What the heck? And I, just so you know. Anyway.
Wait, is that me?
I was talking to the you in general, the you in general.
Okay.
And that's not to say there are a lot of times, and it's what I love about emails, that there are a lot of times I learn from emailers. I mean, there are people, the great thing about baseball fans, man, they can dig into the numbers and there's get a lot of good stuff. But the amount of stuff I get that state something to me as a fact, and I go, whoa, did I not know that? And I check it out. Silly.
Yeah. I try to look things up before I pop off, and certainly to you.
What, you're a journalist?
So,
what?
I'm just trying to keep up. That's all. Just trying to keep up.
I'm gonna miss you, Jay. I'm gonna bring it up before you do, okay?
I wasn't even gonna mention it. Yu Darvish pitches on Saturday. He's been phenomenal, as we know, all year. And I guess that means he'll miss the Dodgers if they're gonna give everybody an extra day.
And I don't know that they will, though, Jay, because you're not going to throw Manaea again. So
that's true.
He's got Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. He pitches the finale against the Dodgers. So it was either.
So how does how does Musgrove get an extra? Where's Musgrove's extra day? Does he get? Oh, he goes Wednesday.
Because you have
day. They're separated.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes more sense. So they're actually lined up for their top three guys.
Yes,
to pitch against the Dodgers, which has definitely not happened.
No, it has not. Whereas last year, both teams lined them up early on.
Yeah. So this year, that'll be interesting. It'll be Snell and Musgrove and Darvish pitching here next week against the Dodgers.
And we did not talk about Blake Snell and all that Cardinals talk. Let's do it really quickly because that was brilliant.
He was incredible that night, and it was like you knew it early because I remember. He struck out Pujols with like a 99 mile an hour fastball, And I said, I don't remember Blake Snell ever throwing 99. And then I saw a couple people tweet, that was the hardest pitch he's ever thrown.
98.6, just school your jets, Blake Snell, because yeah. Adrian Morahone is still throwing 1 mile an hour faster than you, okay? Technically, if your 98.6 was 99, then Adrian Morahone is throwing 100.
Yeah. But his slider, I mean, you can just tell, you know, when guys are swinging at their ankles and everything. I mean, he had everything working that night. You know, the stupid shift. What can I say? We would have seen history, Kevin.
So for those not familiar, Jay pushes back a little bit on the only thing that Jay pushes back on more than umpires is talk that the shift is bad.
I've got to think the people who are telling, who are shifting, and the Dodgers shift more than anyone in baseball, and they've won 182 games or whatever this year. The people who are doing that are pretty smart. If it wasn't working, I don't think they'd be doing it.
I haven't looked up recently, but for much of the season, the Padres have been either number one or number two in terms of their success when in the shift. So, right. You know, it works out pretty much a lot.
And it worked yesterday. I mean, there was a ball in early on. Two runs were saved because Ha-Seong Kim was playing right up the middle. And now he was in a position where that would be a legal shift next year as well, because he was just on the shortstop side of second base and the ball was hit right there. And instead of two runs scoring, so the...
Really, the only thing that will change is my problem with the shift. Is the second baseman playing in the right field. I don't like it. I'm sorry. I also get the argument of, well, don't hit it there then. Okay, yeah. I got it. I got you. But, man, there's a lot of guys who've deserved hits.
I just don't like legislating. Baseball's never been a sport that's legislated where guys could play. Yep. And if you want to line up eight guys on one side of the field, you should be allowed to do that.
Let me tell you something.
The other team should have to beat you. It's like in football, they don't tell you, you know, this isn't the Pro Bowl where they tell you you can't blitz more than one linebacker or something. If you want to rush 11 guys in the NFL, And you're allowed to do that. And then it's up to the offense to figure out a way to beat you.
There's two things, though, that I'm going to say. And I don't think that there's enough respect given to it. And obviously, hitters could change how they hit. If the fact wasn't that, you know, slug gets you paid and slug is what your team wants. Okay. So, you know, you could drop down some bunts. You could, you know, put your bat out and go the other way, whatever. That's not reality, but there's two things I'll say, and it's going to hit both of you. You're probably going to be mad at me, Jay, but I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you. I'm just trying to explain some things. The pitchers are so freaking good right now. It's a lot easier said than done. Okay. Because if they pitch to the correct spot with that nasty stuff, that you almost have no chance. And that's the reason we need robo umps too. Yes. Some of these guys suck, but you know what? It's a lot harder to call strikes and balls now than it was 10 years ago, too.
I agree. And I also don't think that changing the shift rules is going to fix the problem with people still trying to – it's not going to fix the slug. People are still going to try to slug for the same reason that you just mentioned.
But you're also going to get more line drive singles to right field, I think.
That the pitchers are so good.
Yes.
So we'll see what happens.
The pitchers are going to have to work quicker and all this stuff. Yep. I mean, it's going to be fascinating next year.
And they may not be able to throw as hard.
This is NFL level change here. This wasn't like, you know, seven inning doubleheaders or whatever, the runner on second. This was like in game. Oh my gosh. And how about this? I don't know what the WBC rules are, but an awful lot of players are going to miss spring training or a big chunk of it because of the WBC next year. I mean, this is going to be on the fly over the winter. I mean, just all sorts of changes.
Well, and we didn't even get into the pickoff rule stuff, which is going to change things as well. So there'll be plenty of time for you to do that with your new
co-host
here. So anyway, we went past the dreaded 30-minute tone
that
sounded a minute ago, but we were just having too much fun, too much brilliant baseball discussion. Next week, we'll only be able to do this once. We will do it on Tuesday before the series against the Dodgers. So until then, we'll see what happens over the weekend at Coors and if the Padres can avoid a horror show. And maybe when we talk again, they'll be really close to clinching the playoff spot. We'll see what happens.
Bye, everybody.